And also ask yourself whether you want to be right or you want to be happy. Do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? Does it have to be the way you think it is, or do you want to be happy? Okay, we're going to be on page 84 in the text. Who knows what the ego is? Anybody can tell what the ego is?
The separation.
It's the separation. That's exactly right. Can anybody give me another definition the Course gives of the ego?
Fear factor.
The fear factor, okay. Another definition. Anybody else an idea what the Course of the ego is?
Fearful thought.
Fear factor. Separation.
Misperception.
The part of the mind that misperceives. The call for help. Okay, so does everyone in here have an ego?
Yeah.
Okay, so we're not defending that idea, right? So the reason why we're coming together is so that we can re-perceive it, right? Okay, so just keep that in mind. So it's not about hearing only positive things in the class. It's about hearing other ways of looking at things and understanding how the ego works and how to go past the ego. And also how to keep our peace. So I just wanted to say that because this section is pretty intense because it talks about the ego a lot. And if you don't think you have anything in your life that you'd like to re-perceive and you're totally happy about every particular thing that's going on in every area of your life, it might be difficult to see the value in talking about fear. But if it's something you want to see different in your life right now in any area, then that can help you zoom in and focus in. I'm going to read chapter 4 all the way through. I mean, not chapter 4, paragraph 4 on page 84. Whatever you accept into your mind has reality for you. Whatever you accept into your mind has reality for you. It is your acceptance of what you have accepted into your mind that makes what you have accepted in your mind real. If you enthrone the ego in your mind, you're allowing the ego to enter makes the ego your reality. This is because the mind is capable of creating reality or making illusions. I've said before that you must learn to think with God. To think with God is to think like God. Thinking like God, this engenders joy. Not guilt, because joy is natural. Thinking like God engenders joy and not guilt, because thinking like God is natural. Guilt is a sure sign that your thinking is unnatural. Guilt is a sure sign that your thinking is unnatural. Unnatural thinking will always be attended with guilt, because unnatural thinking is the belief in sin, is unnatural thinking. The ego doesn't perceive sin as a lack of love, but as a positive act of assault. Seeing sin as a positive act of assault, this is necessary to the ego's survival. Because as soon as you regard sin as a lack, you will automatically attempt to remedy the situation, and you will succeed in remedying the situation. The ego regards you remedying the situation as doom, but you must learn to regard remedying the situation as freedom. Would you like to hear that paragraph? Would you like to hear that paragraph?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's take it line by line. Okay. It says, what you accept into your mind is reality for you. So anything you accept is real for you. Anything you believe is real for you. As soon as you accept it, the Course says you make it real. So as soon as you believe it, you make it real. So whatever you believe is real for you because you believe it. Everybody still with me? Okay. So he says, if you enthrone the ego, in other words, if you enthrone your fear, or if you enthrone your fearful mind, right? He said, then allowing your fearful thoughts, your fearful mind to enter makes your fearful mind your reality. So when I allow the fear to enter my mind, then the fear becomes my reality. Okay, we still together? Let me know when I lose you, if I lose you, okay? You're riding on this train, okay? So he says, this is because your mind is capable of creating what's real or what's unreal. So whatever you accept into your mind is real for you, and your mind is capable of making the real, and your mind is also capable of making what's not real. So your mind can make love, and your mind can make fear. Okay? And me allowing the fear to enter my mind makes the fear my reality and my experience. But my mind can create love just like it created the fear. We still together? Okay? Then he says a very interesting statement. I said before that you must learn to think with God. Now let's take that out of the abstract. The Course says God is love, one definition. God is truth is another definition. So basically the Course is saying you must learn to think with love. You must learn to think with the truth. Would you with me? And then he says, then he goes on to say, to think with God, if you say I'm going to think with God, if you say I'm going to think with love, if you say I'm going to think with the truth, the Course says you are saying that you are going to think like God. Okay, so if I'm going to think with you, I'm going to think like you. If we thinking together, we thinking alike. Got it? So when I say I'm ready to side with the truth, and I'm ready to go for the truth, well, the Course is saying what you're saying is you're ready to think like this. You're ready to think like what you're reading, or think like what you see as being the truth. We still together? All right. Then the Course says, we're still together? Because I don't mind answering a question. Believe me, after 25 years, I can answer your question. Now, how long it takes you to believe it or accept it, that's up to you. But I can give you the answer that the Course gives. Okay, always remember that. I can always give you an answer out of the book, but I certainly don't have nothing to do with you believing it or accepting it. But I give it to you. So don't ever hesitate to ask me a question. Because I found from studying the Course that the Course is so much simpler than our mind makes it that we don't understand it. So let me simplify it for you. Anytime you get confused. Because I guarantee you that what's happening is your mind, the Course says the mind is complicating it and analyzing it. And that analyzation process is what's confusing you and not what you just heard. It's not what you heard that's confusing you. The Course says when we get confused, what's confusing us is our analyzation of what we just heard. Because I can go back over the last three sentences and it's so logical it makes perfect sense. Whatever I accept into my mind and believe is real, it's real for me. If I walk in here and say, I really believe y'all don't like me, then I'm going to feel like y'all don't like me. It's going to seem real to me. He says, because I accepted that you don't like me, that's what made it real. So if I put my throne, if I enthrone my ego, if the main thing I'm focusing on all the time is what makes me afraid and what makes me upset, then he says, well, that's going to become your reality. That makes sense to me. Then he says that, well, Earl, I know that, but you're also capable of creating some cool stuff, just like you're capable of creating the stuff that's giving you a rough time. But you need to understand that the stuff that's giving you a rough time is coming from you enthroning your own fear in your own mind, which is the past. All right. Then he says, well, I got to learn how to think with the truth. Well, if I'm going to think with the truth, he says, well, you need to start thinking like the truth. So let me give you an example. It would be something like thinking like the truth would say, I am responsible for how I'm seeing things. That's thinking like the truth. I'm an unlimited, loving, powerful spiritual being. That's thinking like the truth. I'm not a body. I have a body, but I'm free. That's thinking like, see what I'm saying? If I'm really thinking like God, he says, if you're really thinking like love, then that's thinking with it. But for me to think about thinking that is not thinking it. In other words, you know what I'm saying? Like one day I'm going to look at myself as the unlimited child of God. Or one day I might see myself as not being about, or one day I might take responsibility for what's happening to me. And I know this book is saying I'm responsible for what I'm experiencing, but the truth is that person. You see what I'm saying? That's not thinking like the truth. That's not using the truth. That's thinking about it.
That's because you're separating yourself?
You're separating. Yeah, you're not applying it. You're outside of it, looking at it. And that's not applying the truth. And that's why people get disgusted with classes like this. They'll come a while, and it look like nothing changed, but they sit up here for an hour. And you know, looking at the aspirin is not going to get rid of the headache. I'm sorry. But you do need to know the aspirin's in the medicine cabinet, so it does serve a function for somebody to say, hey, look, in the medicine cabinet, there's some aspirin. That's what this book is saying. It's just pointing you to the thoughts that'll solve your problem. But it's not. But your problem is not going to be solved until you realize that anything you believe is real for you, and your acceptance of it makes it your reality. And if you're always thinking about what makes you afraid or upset or angry, that becomes your reality. And so he says, well, you need to learn how to think with God. You need to learn how to think with peace. You need to learn how to think with love. Now, okay, everybody with me? Because I can make some love, and I can make some fear. All right. Then it goes on to say, now you can tell when you're thinking like God, because he says this what engenders, and the court says that's the same thing causes, but engenders is a little bit fancier. But whenever you're thinking with the truth, you can always tell, because when you're using the truth, you feel joy. Isn't that simple? If I'm really using the truth, then it generates a feeling of peace. Okay? Then it goes on. What's the next part of it says? Now, what is joy? And then when you're reading the Course in Miracles and you see a sentence like, this engenders joy, and you look in your book and it says, comma, the next, whatever is after the comma is always going to give you the definition of what was before the comma. So you don't have to figure out what it's saying, because it defines itself throughout the whole thing. So let me give you an example. Let's go back. He says, you must learn to think with God. And then the first thing a person says is what? What does it mean to think with God? And then the next part of the sentence says, to think like God. What does it mean to think like God? Well, when you're thinking like God, you're going to be happy. Oh, what does it mean to have happiness, joy? It means you're not feeling guilt about nothing. All right? How can I tell when I'm truly happy? I don't feel any guilt. We're not talking about the kind of guilt like, you know, well, because I did something bad last night and I feel bad about it. We're talking about fear. Fear, according to the Course, is nothing but guilt. It's just another flavor. So if the Course says, if you have any form of lack of peace, is a form of guilt. So some people say, well, I don't feel guilty about anything. Yeah, but you had a cold last week, didn't you? You know, you had felt that little ache the other morning, didn't you? You know. Do you feel 100% happy and peaceful all the time? And what about everybody you know and everybody you can even think of? Because when you have true peace, that's the way it is. You feel it, everybody you know feel it, and everybody you think of feel it. Then the mind goes instantly, well, if that's the condition of real peace, I'm never going to have it. Because even if I can pull it off for myself, I certainly can't pull it off for everybody else and even the people I don't know. So it seems like an impossible task, right? Right?
Yeah.
It doesn't seem impossible for you to bring peace to everybody? Right. That the purpose of that is to make you stop depending on yourself. The Course says we are presented with things that we cannot do alone, so that we stop doing stuff alone.
Huh?
Because he says the minute you try to achieve something that you can't do alone, then you are no longer alone. Because the mere fact that you can't do it alone attracts support. Because you're not looking at it like, I got to do it by myself. Follow me? The self-made man who has to do it by themselves says to the universe, don't help me. And they end up doing it all by themselves and then resenting it. The person who says, I cannot do this alone, I ask for support, gets support. Does that make sense to everybody? But it's totally opposite to the way our ego thinks. Our ego thinks you're stronger because you did it by yourself. The spirit thinks you're kind of quite silly because you did it by yourself. Because there wasn't any need to do it by yourself. You could have got it done a lot better, faster with help. So it's not really smart. It's not a smart thing when you could have had help to work on something all by yourself. Unless you want to do it by yourself. If anybody here want to defend it, I'm going to let you do it. Anybody here want to defend doing it all by yourself and all on your own and why it's really good to do it all by yourself and all on your own, please talk to me now. Because what you're doing is you are requesting to do it alone.
I think it causes a greater separation, too, when you're going to do it by yourself. Because there's no one there to support you. You don't have anyone to talk to. You're there by yourself, and just depending on that ego.
Mm-hmm.
So once you make the statement, by myself, you've already centered that in your mind.
And what did I just say at the very beginning?
Yeah.
Right. Whatever you accept in your mind, it has reality for you, then it becomes your experience. So the minute you say, I got to do it by myself, that becomes real for you. I got to do it by myself. That means even if the help was offered to you, you wouldn't see it. Because you censor it out of your mind. Because you've already decided there's nobody to help you. I can't tell you how many people in my life that I've offered them help about something they were talking about, and they didn't even hear me. And I know you've all had the same experience where you say, well, I'll do so, and they'll go, they just keep talking, or they say, no, I couldn't let you. You know what I'm saying? It's like, because they've already decided they got to do it by themselves. Okay. Now, keep on that. What I'm going to do is help you with reading the Course, and see the Course reads more simply than other books, and that's why it's hard to read, because it assumes you don't know what it's talking about. Okay, so let me go on. Okay, so he says, now, when you're thinking like God or thinking with God, he says, this engenders joy, which means what? Not guilt. Now, if it's not guilt, what is it? Natural. So a natural experience is an experience that you're having without guilt, fear, or anger. That's a natural experience. An experience that you're having without guilt, fear, and anger. Okay, because they're the same thing. He says, now, then he goes on to say, guilt is a sure sign that your thinking is not natural. So what would be unnatural thinking? You just go back. Well, unnatural thinking is not to think like God, which is not to think like love, which is not to think like the truth. So when you're feeling guilty, the one thing you can be sure of is you ain't thinking nothing the Course saying. And you're not thinking nothing none of the truth books that you've studied saying. You're not using nothing you read on your spiritual path when you're feeling guilty. That's the one thing you can be sure of in that moment. You're thinking just like your brother, sister, cousin, friend, anybody out in the street that's never picked up a truth book when you're feeling unnatural. When you've lost sight that love is your only reality. Isn't that deep? It's like I have the truth in my mind, and I read all these books, and here it is, just look at it like this. But the minute that I'm feeling unnatural, and the minute I'm feeling guilty, I'm using the old thought. Those books might be in my mind, but in that instant, I'm not using, I'm innocent, I have help, I'm not alone, nothing can ever stop me from having happiness, peace, and love, and joy. See, I'm not using those thoughts. They're in my mind, but I'm not using them. Anytime I'm depressed, anytime I'm angry, and anytime I'm afraid, I'm thinking with my ego. Anytime. But that doesn't mean I should feel guilty about it, because if I feel guilty about it, I'm still using my ego. So the ego is going to say, feel bad about not applying the truth the way you should, but that's still the ego. If you were applying the truth, you could feel guilty and feel afraid and still not make yourself feel guilty about it. Because you know that's just the way your ego thinks. Just like you go, I know this is my shirt. There's no need for me to get to judge it. There's no need for me to be freaking out about it. The part of my mind that makes fear makes fear. The part of my mind that makes anger makes anger. So it's made some anger, but all I need to remember is this. If I want to have joy, then I need to start thinking like the truth and thinking with the truth. And if I'm really thinking with the truth, I'll be happy and I won't feel guilty. And if I'm not peaceful, and if I'm feeling guilty, I know my thinking is unnatural. Okay?
Well, when you're talking about that, it occurred to me, I'm like, wow, where did guilt come from? And what if we raised our children not to have guilt? Where does it come from? We have to teach people guilt. We're not born in guilt, right?
We're born in guilt. I'm not being funny. We're born in guilt.
How can we be born in guilt?
Because we're in a world where we're surrounded by the idea.
Okay, so we're taught it.
You know what I'm saying? It's really that literally that true. How could you be a part of a world without you having those thoughts in you, too?
It's true, and you're punished for not feeling it. You say, if somebody says to you, don't you feel guilty? You say, no.
And the Course says, the Course in Miracles says, quote, to the ego, the guiltless are guilty. Okay, which is just what you're saying.
Right.
To a mind that doesn't know the truth, to a mind that is full of guilt, to a mind that believes in sin, to not believe in sin is the greatest sin. Right. That's exactly right. To an insane mind, the person that is most crazy is the person who doesn't think like the insane mind does.
I know I'm going straight
to hell now. You know you what?
I'm going straight to hell.
Right. No. Well, there's a part of your mind that has.
Sure.
Okay. You're in a place where a plane could drop out of the sky and crash on your house and kill you. That's hell. That's hell. That's what the book is saying. It basically says you're in hell already, but you don't even know it. You think you're going there. And when I read that, I was like, man, he said, and what you do is you take certain parts of hell and you call that fun. And I went, that's true. Because the same place a plane could drop on me is the same place I'll go to a movie, and it's the same place I'll take a walk in the park, and it's the same place I'll take a trip to Paris. So there's some parts of hell that I call cool. But the Course is saying, for you to be in a place where it even appears that you and your loved ones could be harmed or die would never be a place that love or God ever put you. I don't care how much you like some parts of it. I don't care how much you're going to defend some parts of it. The truth is, nothing that loves you puts you somewhere where you could even accidentally hurt yourself. And this book has that kind of reason in it. That's what drew me to it. I was like, well, finally, I'm not crazy. Because I've always thought these thoughts and wonder why nobody else didn't seem to say anything about it. I've always wondered that as long as I've been here. Why people don't question it. Are you all like that? Mm-hmm. I came here wondering why people don't question it. And so it's what you're saying. The ones you know, let me ask you something. If you walked into this room and there was a lion laying on the floor asleep, would you wake the lion up and let it know you were there? Or would you try to just easily and quietly just pass by the lion and go out the room?
I definitely would not wake that lion up.
Okay, then that's the way it is when you're trying to change your friends, your relatives, and other people around you who don't think like you.
Yeah.
You're doing the exact same thing. When you think it's your job to explain to them or get them to understand your point of view or to agree with you, it's just like going up to the lion and shaking it. Because what they believe has reality for them in their mind. And it's real to them. They see sin. They're not kidding. They see the evil people. And they see the guilt. And they see the crime. They're not joking. They see it. So when you say it's not real, you seem crazy to them. Because they don't see the world you're looking at. They don't see the world where everybody around them is treating them kind and loving. They don't see the world where they're getting a lot of support all the time, no matter what. They don't see the world where they're doing what they love to do every day. And those of us who are more or less in that kind of world, we don't exist to them. And not only that, the Course says, they're going to make you like them. So as far as they're concerned, you got the same qualities that they have.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they think that you know, did you follow what I'm saying? Everybody follow what I'm saying? You got done. Once you get that everybody sees the reality that's based on the belief that they've accepted into their mind, then it cools you out as far as feeling like you got to try to convince anybody else about anything, because you know immediately that you can't do that. All you can do is set an example of what it's like to have natural thinking. And sooner or later, they'll notice, and they'll go, you know, I noticed that you seem to be pretty cooled out most of the time, even though I seem to be tripping about everything. You know what I'm saying? It's just the example you set that will make, then once they ask you, then that's how you know that's God asking you through them. And so then you give them your truth from your heart because they're ready for it, whether they accept it right then or not.
But you don't go trying to push it down their throat.
There is a lion that is laying on the floor. Would you go to the lion and inject and open his mouth and then, you know what I'm saying? Even though it was a good steak, would you open his mouth and jam it down and that? No, that's what I'm saying. Because I guarantee you there are more beings out there who are not the sleeping lion that would love to hear what you have to say and wouldn't be dangerous to you than you could meet in a lifetime. I promise you that. But most people don't meet the people who are open and receptive to them because they're too busy trying to change the people who are not.
Okay. It almost seems like a form of self-sabotage, like that you're allowing your ego to sabotage the truth beliefs that you have, and that's why you feel like you have to talk to somebody who's going to shut you down.
Thank you. That is so cool. Say it again.
That it seems like a form of self-sabotage, that it's your ego that wants to try and turn them, but really you know, or your ego knows that they're going to be shutting you down and making you more like them instead of, you know, looking at things with love and peace. And
you know who to go to who's going to reinforce your beliefs.
Yeah.
And you know who to go to that will help you not reinforce your beliefs. You know what I'm saying? You know before you pick up the phone, if you know your friends, you pretty much know who you're going to call depending on how guilty you are. There's some friends, if you've done the guiltiest thing you could ever imagine, you'll call them and tell them because you feel so innocent in their presence that you feel like you can share your deepest, darkest secret. And there's some people that the slightest thing you do, you never tell them because of the judgment that you perceive that they do. You know what I'm saying? So we know when we want to feel guilty. It's about who you dial. You know, pay attention to who you dial and when you feel bad, and you'll know whether you want to feel worse or you want to feel better. I want to believe there is no hell and no sin. I think I'll call Billy Graham. I'm going to get a lot of support on that. Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to share a wonderful thing my daughter said the other night. We were at dinner with a man who was somewhat prejudiced, just from South Africa. Anyway, he said, there are two kinds of people in the world, the good people and the bad people. Jessica said, actually, there are two kinds of people in the world, those that believe there are good and bad people, and the rest of us. Good.
I would, you know, it's like what he heard in that moment was exactly what he should have heard in that moment. And if I was in a situation like that, you know what I'd do? I'd encourage him to speak more. I'd try to learn as much as I could about the way his mind operated.
You know exactly where they're coming from.
Right, because if I know exactly where you're coming from, I know how to have the most peaceful approach to you. But if I shut you down, then you're going to go into hiding and I won't know who you are. And you're still going to be that way, but I won't know nothing about it. That's why I don't correct people. You'll be around me and you can say almost anything and you just watch me and just see how much you ever see me correct you. I'm not going to correct you. First of all, I'm not correcting you. I'm telling you you're wrong. So that immediately puts up a defense. I don't care how nice or sweet I try to say it. Plus, I realize if it's the truth, you're going to find it out sooner or later anyway. So it's not like if I don't say anything, you're not going to get the truth. But then if I encourage you to feel safe enough to speak, I know that behind your open communication is love. So I know that on the other side of you feeling totally safe to talk to me, you'll get to the love that's behind your prejudice. And you'll get to the love that's behind your fear. And these are just things that I've learned from studying the Course. And you know, it's so much easier than the old way I used to do it, which was to feel like I needed to correct people all the time. I just always felt like it was like, even if it was for their own good, even if it was to say something that was wonderful, I still felt like I had to correct them. And the Course told me, you know, it's only the ego that believes it needs to correct other egos. And if it's really something that you need to say, you're going to say it without thinking it anyway. If it's a real communication, it's just going to come out of you before you know it. You've already said it. But the communication that you're thinking about is probably the communication that's the most deceptive, because you're trying to figure out the best way to say it. I like for people to feel safe enough to just say what's on their mind without censorship. But I couldn't take it until I had worked on my own inner peace and inner love, because then I'd take it personally if they said something about me, and then I would get defensive and I would get angry. And so I had to have a pretty good center within myself before I could really handle people communicating whatever they needed to say to me. And that didn't mean I had to always feel like I had to like it either. It just meant that I had to not attack. It's the attack that's the problem. So the course is infinitely, infinitely practical. And so whatever that, but then if whatever you say to a person is what they needed to hear in that moment, no matter what you say. So you also don't have to feel like beating yourself up about anything you might have said to somebody in the past, because whatever you said to them was what they needed to hear. Even if you think you made a mistake and said it. In that moment, for some reason, out of all the things that could have been said to you or to them in the whole universe, they heard what you said. So that for some reason that needed to be said. So you see how that would make you feel innocent? Notice how all the answers I've been given have been about making it being easier and innocent. Pass by the line, don't correct, but if you did, it still was the best thing for them to hear. See, when you're coming from the love thought system, I don't care what you hear, you go, okay, that's it, okay. Because the ego is looking for where you made an error to be punished for.
Right.
Okay.
I have something strange that happens to me. I'll start growing spiritually, and somebody from my past, it's like they sense it by radar, and they'll call me in. I don't call them, they call me and kind of mess with me.
Well, let's see if you're going to use it, and let's see if you're just talking stuff.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, you think you've changed, okay. Here I am. You know what I'm saying? Like the guy from South Africa, let's say he had a racial prejudice. Well, I know he's calling up every black person all over the world to cross his path. Whatever he resists is going to come right into his experience. Or he have a child that wants to marry somebody of another race. So somehow or another, you're going to get it. You know what I'm saying? I had to learn how to have totally complete spiritual tolerance and open-mindedness and really respect the right of a person to follow their own path. And my children became born-again Christians. That's my personal experience. So, Mr. Let Everybody Be, Mr. Trust Everybody's Path No Matter What, Mr. Love Everybody Whether They Have a Different Belief, how about your own kids? See what I'm saying? So don't worry. The universe is fair. That's the other thing I love about it. You know, like I don't have to be the bounty hunter for nobody. I know that they got to live within their own consciousness. And for some people, that's enough punishment. Because a lot of times when people attack me or I had an opportunity to get upset at somebody, the first thing I think in my mind is, you know, it's punishment enough just to have a mind like that. I don't really have to do anything. Yeah, it's like that person's got to be suffering just from having a mind like that. Just think, that's the mind they use all day. Can you imagine the kind of... It's like, no, that's all right, just be you. You know, that'll take care of you. I don't have to do nothing, you know. I think that's a great deal, you know. Woo, I love it. Okay, now I want to get back on this part about guilt and unnatural thinking. Okay, so how many of you now think you would know when you were listening to your ego? Okay, who can tell me? Just to make sure, help you remember it. Who's willing to share it so you can remember?
Peace is gone. The guilt is here.
Boom. Okay. Anybody else want to tell me?
Well, you want to be separate.
I want to be separate. Okay.
But I feel sorry for myself.
Okay. Unnatural thinking. So instead of saying I feel guilty, we every time we come around each other, we should say, if I ask you how you're feeling, let's say you're feeling fearful or angry or depressed about something, you would say to me, Earl, you know, today, man, I'm having some unnatural thinking, man. I'm having some unnatural thinking and unnatural feeling. When we start doing like that, that's when we know we're getting the course. When someone says that back to you, you go, oh my God, this is the person that's getting the truth. Because they're using a new interpretation. then I don't have to be in denial, but I'm also not limiting myself anymore because there's something about calling it unnatural that makes my mind immediately want to have it corrected. When I tell you I feel guilty, okay, I feel guilty. Big deal, I feel guilty. What else is new? But if I say to you, my thinking is unnatural, the first thing you're going to do is you're going to want my thinking to be natural. And the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to want my thinking to be natural. But if I say I feel guilty, I don't need to do that much about that.
Is that the same as when you do something that you haven't done in a long time, and you do something and somebody asks you, why did you do it? And you have no answer. I don't know why. I just did it.
Now you know why.
Because it was unnatural thing.
Yes.
Oh, God.
Why did you get in that relationship? You was thinking unnaturally because you was blasted that night. And you had drunk about 9 daiquiris. And you was doing a little unnatural thinking. So you said, come on, go home with me, baby. You know what I'm saying? That's some unnatural thinking. I've had unnatural relationships. Have you? Have you ever had unnatural relationships? See, isn't that different? I had an unnatural marriage. I had an unnatural love affair. Something about it, immediately you go, huh, I don't want to do something that's unnatural. And then you start thinking about sheep and stuff, you know.
That's
so
right.
It's something about unnatural. You go, oh, what about that unnatural stuff now, you know. Okay, I love land. So here's the last two paragraphs. Okay, so he says, now, guilt is a sure sign that your thinking is what? Unnatural. Okay. So he says, unnatural thinking will always be attended with guilt. And then you go, well, what is guilt? The belief in sin. So, you know, the truth is, you know what? I believe in sin. And I thought I didn't believe in sin at all. But according to this definition, it's a sin for me to believe I'm guilty. Why is it a sin? The Course says sin is nothing but a perception of something that you think is irreversible and can't be changed. So the minute I call something a sin, it's like me saying that this thing is something that couldn't be healed and couldn't be corrected. Sin is also an incredible cop-out. You want to know how? Because if someone says you are just a sinner and you can't help it, then don't you see how that's a cop out? Now you don't have to take responsibility. Now you don't have to do nothing about it. Now you don't have to do anything different. But if I think I'm sinful, then I think I'm guilty, and my thinking is unnatural, so I'm going to enthrone fear in my mind, going to have a frightening experience, and then going to believe I must be sinful. Look at all this stuff. Look, it's a circle. Look at all the stuff that's happening to me. I couldn't possibly be a good person with so much bad stuff happening to me. Something must be wrong with me if all this stuff keeps happening to me. But I don't realize all this stuff is happening to me because I already believe unnaturally, which is that I am not loved and I am not innocent completely. So I'm starting out unnaturally. When I came here, I went to church and they told me I was born in sin and they told me I was guilty as a child. And so that was telling me I was flawed. Right? Okay, what I enthroned in my mind, even as a child, will become your experience. It's the rule still applies. So if you plant those ideas of sin and guilt in a child's mind that at some basic level they're flawed, then yeah, you see why you go through the things you go through in childhood that validate that you are not enough.
Because you believe it.
Because you believe it. And truth works as much as you're a kid as if you're anybody else. Children are not like outside of the laws of God. You know, in other words, you know, the truth is working for them just like it's working for anybody else. And if you are young and you've been taught you are not enough, then you're going to act that belief out in your experience too. And then you're going to be convinced that it's true. And by the time you're an adult, you got enough baggage to be Louis Vuitton. You know what I'm saying? Woo! Lord have mercy. And the older you get, the more baggage you have. Unless you really get clear that you're not your bags.
What would happen if you raised a child? with pure light and love, and they never felt guilt.
I've never seen anybody like
they
that.
They wouldn't be on Earth.
I hope I never see anybody like that in the world like this. I want to see a person like that in a world like that.
Yeah. There we go.
You know what I'm saying? I want to be in the world of love.
Yeah.
I want to be in the world of it. And just because I haven't seen it doesn't mean it doesn't exist. And every time I try to use my own personal experience as validation for whether or not I should do anything, then I would never try to prove my life at all. Because when you try to improve your life, you're always trying to go for some state other than the one you think you're in. So if it had to already be there for me to believe it, then I would move forward. What keeps me going is knowing that just like I produce this world from thinking the fearful thoughts, if I think the other thoughts, that'll produce a world that reflects that.
And isn't that what you said, that when you think with love,
mm-hmm.
that it takes away thinking the guilt?
That's how you know. That's how you know. That's what keeps you from fooling yourself.
Right.
If I'm really thinking naturally, I won't be feeling guilty and I'll be feeling good. And it's loving. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
A person that murders someone, I don't care how much they smile, they're not really feeling good, okay? They're crazy.
Yeah.
Okay, so they're not feeling good for real. Or they would never kill anybody. You don't kill anybody if everything's cool. You know what I'm saying? So you're already crazy if you really get ready to harm anybody. You've already left sanity. Okay, that's what I love. I don't care how much you smile at me. If you're doing something unloving, you're not really happy. So I'm not saying that, you know, happy just because you smile, that means you know that you think it right. But we're talking about a joy that's emanating from the center of your being. Mm-hmm. Not because you thought you did some behavior that was cool. Two different things.
Yeah.
Two different things. See the difference?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You have to, yeah. Mm. All right.
You just answered my question.
Yeah, it's weird how spirit will do that. Okay, so it says that, I'm going to finish this paragraph. It says the ego does not perceive sin as a lack of love, but as a positive act of assault. That's true. When somebody in the world sees somebody as having done something wrong, they act like that person attacked them. We don't look at it like, in other words, if a person was to mug you, the average person would not see that as a lack of love. The average person would see that as a positive act of assault. Agreed? Right. That's what the book is saying. That the ego, the fearful mind, it sees sin as like you've done something to hurt somebody. It doesn't see pain and suffering and anger and, you know, and sickness as a lack of love. The reason why that happened was a lack of love. The reason why that murder happened was a lack of love. The reason why that burglary happened was a lack of love. The reason why that carjacking happened was a lack of love. Even the news don't start out with, we're going to give you a list of lacks of love today that happened all across the country. Now, there was a lack of love in Kansas and this guy killed an entire family. You see what I'm saying? If it was said that way, then a newscast would truly be helpful. Because you would be given the answer and the cause of the problem while you were even describing the form it took. You would be covering all of it all at once. A lack of love happened today. A call for love happened in the form of a train jumped the tracks and went over into a lake. That was a form of lack of love. So that would be an immediate request for more love in this situation. It would make all of us think, oh, we need more love. Oh, we need more love. Oh, we need more love. See, all of a sudden our minds will start asking for the solution. But when you see it as a positive act of attack or sin, then the first thing that come up is, he needs to be punished, she needs to be punished, they need to be punished, he needs to be punished, they need to be punished, he needs to be punished, they need to be punished. I love how today they don't give life sentences. They'll give 320 years. I think that's so funny. You read the paper and they go, oh, she was just sentenced to 110 years. I'm like, but she didn't get a life sentence. You know, like, okay, who you know lived 320 years? Okay, that means that when they die, and if you believe in reincarnation, they die when they come back and go straight to jail. As soon as they take them straight from the nursery to the jail. For three more lifetimes. That's cold. That is so cold. Oh, boy.
Well, I used to work in the jail system, and so when somebody would come back after a sentence like that, then I'd say, well, do as many as you can.
I know, yeah, they need to laugh at the in a moment like that. They need to laugh bad, I tell you. No doubt about it. And with a lot of people, you know exactly what's going through their mind, which is something like, how in the hell did I end up in this impossible situation? You know, how did this happen to me? I bet you sooner or later that if they are relatively sane, that's the first thing that happens is they go, what? How did I end up here? Through enthroning the ego in their own mind, the part of them that believes in fear and limitation as reality, the part that believes in attack. And guess what? If I believe in attack and I believe I should be punished, then every time I do something that makes me feel guilty, I'm going to punish myself some kind of way. And that's why I use that goal of unnatural thinking, because unnatural thinking is a request for punishment instead of correction. See, if Earl makes a mistake, what Earl would like the universe to do is lovingly correct his error. Earl would not like the universe to punish him if he makes a mistake. He would like to have his mistake lovingly corrected. Now, there's a catch to that. You want to know the catch? Who knows the catch? A part of you has to really want to accept that it's true and enthrone that in your mind. What's the biggest catch of all? What do you think would be the biggest thing to keep people from using that idea of their own mistakes being lovingly corrected and not being punished for it?
They'll all be corrected. And everybody's.
There you go. You hear what he's saying? It's like I'm willing. Like the Course says, we want our mistakes to be corrected, but we want everybody else's mistakes that they should be punished for them. And that's what keeps us from having our mistakes lovingly corrected. See, when Earl makes a mistake, he wants people to go, well, you know, that was Earl. He just went temporarily crazy for a minute. He just needs to have a little love and give him another chance, and he won't do it no more. And then that's where it might be. But then let somebody else do something, and we'll go, they need to hang him from the highest tree. See, so because there are other people that I don't want their mistakes lovingly corrected, then that's me keeping all of my mistakes from being lovingly corrected. Because when I exclude him from the correction, I create the possibility of myself being excluded from the correction. See, that's the kind of, this is what we call the hardcore stuff. You know what I'm saying? And so he says you need to see when you make a mistake as a positive act of assault, which the ego calls sin. He says this is necessary to your fear of survival. Because as soon as you regard sin or attack or hurt as a lack, you will automatically attempt to remedy the situation, and you will succeed in remedying the situation. But the part of you that is afraid, that believes in punishment, the ego, regards you responding to error with love as doomed. But you must learn to regard responding to other people's mistakes and errors and your mistakes and errors as a lack of love, and responding to that as freedom. The part of me that hates me is not going to want me to see my own mistakes as just errors that need to be corrected. The part of me that hates me, or that is afraid, or hates you, or that's afraid of you, wants some punishment to come down. He says, but you must learn to regard every time you can see anybody else's acts as errors. He says, that's going to be your way out of the fearful lack mind. And you'll start experiencing your love, your prosperity, your abundance, and your freedom. If you go, that person made a hell of a mistake. Don't you see what you're doing? If what you enthrone in your mind becomes your reality, don't you see what you're doing? You're actually creating your own escape by creating a state of mind that attracts love and help to you. Okay, stop there. Yeah, I can use a little acknowledgement. Give me some encouragement. Thank y'all. I appreciate that. You know what I'm saying? I need it. It's scary to say this stuff sometimes. So I like that. I need to know y'all want to hear it, you know. Good. I'm glad to hear that. Yeah. Take the people that you have the most grievances with, put them at the end of the line. Take the people you have the most grievances with, put them at the end of the line. Take the people that you have the most misperceptions of, put them at the end of the line. Take the things that you get the most excited and upset about, put them at the end of the line. As far as you're trying to learn how to see things as a lack of love or a mistake, don't start with the thing that you know you got the biggest charges about. You start with the things you have the least charge about. You don't start with the Holocaust. You don't start with slavery. You know what I'm saying? That's what the ego does. The ego says, you don't start with the person that molested you as a child. You don't start with the person that robbed you. You don't start with those people with the forgiveness process. You don't start with those people, even though those are the people that I'm tempted to start with because I think that's why I'm trying to learn the truth, is so I can forgive them, right? But we know the person that wants to do the Olympics didn't start out at the Olympic competition. It started out at the local level. Start at the local level before you deal with your Olympic guilt or your Olympic anger or your Olympic grievance. Don't start with the Olympics. Is okay? Everybody with me on that one? You see what I'm saying? Thank you for sharing with me. I do this for a living. So if it's valuable to you, you can share it financially. I really appreciate that. Even if you can't, you're still welcome and I love you. But I want to let you know that the money is very helpful to help me continue my ministry and to be here and to do this class and to share with you. And so thank you for financial sharing. Let me pass that. Really appreciate you. Also, I want to tell you how much I appreciate being able to actually work out this Course in Miracles book with Course in Miracles students. That is such a thrill to me because so many course classes, they don't do the course. It becomes a therapy session. And people are talking about their analyzation processes of it, but never really taking the time to do like we're doing together in here. Actually take each sentence, listen to it, see how it all relates. That's, you don't know, I really, really, really appreciate that. And those of you who are trying to get in that book and want to get down in it, take advantage of 25 years that I focused in this stuff. Don't be struggling with stuff that I can look down at that page and show you how to see it in an instant that would make it easier for you to get. There's no need to reinvent the wheel. Don't try to do it alone. It's not necessary to do it alone. That don't mean that I want you to call me at 3 o'clock in the morning about a paragraph. But I'm saying, you know, you're here, you got the book, I'm here. Use me in that instant. Because the ego is just, that part of our mind is tricky, I'm telling you. It have you trying to figure out stuff that I can point to where there's a passage in the book that explains that in 5 minutes. But that's the way it is with adults. You know, we really got that I got to do it alone syndrome. Or like, somehow or another, it's a reflection on me if I ask for help. Or something I couldn't figure out by myself. Ugh. God, isn't it a trip to know that the path to God is nothing but learning how to let things be easier for yourself? That's the path. It's actually to undo the struggle. Whew.
I think the helpful thing you said today was that it doesn't even matter if other people see things differently. That is just their perception, their way. And it's more important to live your life. That's to convince other people or let them convince you otherwise.
He says in the Course that our job is to turn hell into heaven. I think that's so cool. In other words, it's not about, it's like this is a place where there is fear. And so he says our job is to help turn it into a place of love. And then it says the way you do that, and this was the part that hooked me. He says the way you do that is to learn how to let yourself be happy. He didn't say the way to do that was me to go out and try to make all of you all happy. He said, the way for me to turn hell into heaven or fear into love is to let myself have some love. Let myself be loved. Let myself have peace. Whoa. Could y'all handle it that easy? Or do you still want to make it to be there's somebody you got to change?
No, I want it to be that easy.
Yeah, I do too. How many of y'all kind of burn out on it when that change the other person kind of thing, and you still got some people you really addicted to getting them to do something different for you to be happy? Anybody? You got a couple of people that you still kind of like get really upset with them when they don't do something the way you want it done?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, well, that's what I'm talking about. That's how you know. That's how you know when you're still making your happiness based on somebody else changing. It's the person you get the most angry at.
I think for me, Earl, it's been more of a challenge to allow myself to have complete peace than worrying about other people.
you're in phase two.
And not, you know, really truly allowing yourself to be fulfilled and peaceful. That's more of a challenge, I think, than any argument you can ever give to someone else.
Mm-hmm. So you've moved, you've grown enough in your consciousness that you've moved into phase two. Phase one is, you know, believing that, you know, you realizing that you've made your happiness based on trying to get somebody else to change. That's a big step. The next step is to realize it's really about letting yourself be happy and then getting in touch with just how much is required to let yourself, because you think that would be the easiest thing in the world. Oh, yeah, I'd be ready to let me be happy. And then when you really set that as a goal, all of a sudden you see.
It's more of a challenge for me. Yeah, it makes you feel like, can I really do this?
Right. Yeah, and so now it's like, I know that I'm not supposed to try to do this
alone.
Boom.
Yeah.
Boom. Yeah.
You know you can't do it by yourself unless you've already done it.
Oh, you would have already done it. Because your plan has been to try to make up a plan and act it out anyway.
I'm like, I'm doing very good.
So. Yeah, and that's what we do, though. We make up plans for our happiness, and then we try to act them out. Then we make up another plan for our happiness, then we try to act them out. And then most of the grievances are around other people not taking the role that we've decided they should take in our plan.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the whole little ego hell dance. Yeah, it's cool. It's cool. So we're waking up, you all. We are really waking up. So you get ready to go back out in the lab on a beautiful day.
Do we start taking plans, or do we start caring if other people want the same plan?
Well, you learn how to carry out a plan.
We still create plans in our minds and things that we want.
But you're going to learn how to carry out a plan. One day you're going to stop trying to make a plan for your happiness, and you're going to be willing to carry out the divine plan for your happiness.
You're
going to
be a doer.
Yeah, you're going to be allowing yourself to receive the plan from the part of you that does have natural thinking.
There you go.
Yeah.
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 Yeah.